Meeting will come to order. Ray, if you'll take a silent roll. Committee, I'll remind you of our mission. We're supposed to make an overall assessment of Idaho's economy, and the second part is to review the governor's fiscal years 2009 and 10 general fund revenue projections and provide advice to the legislature regarding the total estimated revenues. With that in mind, today we have Mike Ferguson and Derek Santos from the Division of Financial Management to talk to us about the governor's budget. Following that, we'll get a short presentation from Ray Houston, and then we'll start talking about what we're going to do with those numbers. Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Apparently the committee did get the memo on gloom and doom. What I'm going to do this afternoon is take you through very quickly through the process that we use to develop the general fund revenue forecast and provide you with some information that I would characterize as supplemental to what appears in the general fund revenue book. With the limited time available, I want to just dive into this quickly. You have a packet from me that contains three different sets of charts. Two that are sets of tables and a third that is line graphs. I want to start with the two tables. First one is labeled actual history and forecast for the general fund. If you look at this table, what you'll see in the lower right of the enclosed box is our forecast for FY 2009, 10, and 11 general fund revenue. This is our actual revenue forecast, the amount that we think is going to come through the door. See the $2.633 billion, $2.659 billion, and $2.779 billion for the respective years. These incorporate law changes. There are several that impact the actual revenue number that we're forecasting. They are basically the grocery credit, which started its impact in FY 2009 at $23.5 million and grows over the forecast horizon. And also bonus depreciation, which was enacted last year, which affects the FY 2009 forecast in a negative sense, and then in subsequent years becomes positive. On this table, below the actual revenue chart, are some diagnostics. We have Idaho personal income on a fiscal year basis, the percent change from year to year, and then general fund revenue as a percentage of personal income. Below that are the shares of the five main revenue categories, and then below that is the share of individual income tax to personal income, the ratio of the percent change in those two concepts, and then likewise for the sales tax. And those diagnostics are repeated on several other of these charts, and it should be evident what that's about. I won't take the time to repeat that. Now, the actual revenue forecast is what you're interested in. For the last 2 years, and this is the third year, we've been producing a second forecast, a forecast that we had been characterizing as the ongoing revenue forecast. We've changed the terminology a little bit. We're now calling it the trend forecast. And what it's meant to represent is the long-term relationship between the state's personal income as the best broad aggregate for the economy and the general fund revenue stream. And I'll explain in a minute how we arrive at that. But first, if you look at the second set of tables, the one labeled normalized history and forecast, these are the numbers from the actual sheet restated to reflect current tax law, the current tax structure, both in terms of distribution formula as well as tax rates. You could think of FY 2008 as the base year for this normalization process, and prior years have been essentially adjusted to reflect, for example, a 6% sales tax, the current income tax rate structure, the current bracketing, and so on and so forth. If you look at the last page of this sheet, of this set, there's a list of how that normalization process is conducted. But the important thing is that this is essentially the revenue history and forecast restated as though there had not been any law changes relative to the 2008 base year. With that normalized history, we then calculate a trend. And that trend is on the second page of this group, and it's labeled Normal Trend History and Forecast. And the figures you see here are the amounts of revenue, and the one I would draw your attention to is the bottom, total general fund revenue, because that is done as a separate equation using a two-year moving average of income. This is on the sheet. This is normal trend.
Yeah. Mr. Ferguson, there's something labeled, actual trend, normal trend. Okay,
right. There's two sets of these data. One is the actual, the other is the normalized. And there's a reason for putting them into that set of two packets. To do the trend, we use the normalized. And that's what you're looking at on the sheet that's labeled normal trend. And what you can see, for example, is that in FY 2002, when we had an actual decline of 14.3% in general fund revenue and a normalized decline of 9.9%, the trend would have grown by 4.5% that year, because the trend is connected to the long-term relationship between personal income on the one hand and the revenue stream on the other. It's basically smoothed out for cyclical volatility, things that are associated with booms and busts, and that will become more clear in a moment. We take the trend, subtract it from the actual total, and arrive at the cycle component, and that's also listed on the table. But to put this into context that I think is a bit more understandable, I'm going to jump to the third set of charts, the line graphs, and walk through these. And this should, I think, help explain the essence of this process. This chart provides data going back to FY 1970 through FY 2008, and then presents forecasted values out to FY 2016. This particular, the first chart is normalized, and that's what we use to actually calculate the trended revenue value. And if you look at the green line, it basically follows the red line, but in the case of the middle of the 80s, the red line of actual was below the trend line. In the case of 2000 and 2001, the red line, the actual number, was above the trend line. What happened in 2000-2001 was we were getting large amounts of capital gains that were associated with the investment boom that occurred during the middle and latter part of the 90s, and that led to extraordinarily high revenue receipts, as reflected on the red portion of the line. The green line, on the other hand, is the trend that goes through that historical data. If you extend out through the current period of 2008, the last historical year, you can see that we dipped below in 2002, 3, and 4, so we had 3 years that we were below the trend, even though we only had 1 year of negative growth during that period. We stayed below the trend for 3 years. Then we hit the trend in FY 2005, And then in 6, 7, and 8, we went back above the trend. That's the real estate boom that was occurring over the past several years. Now, if you flip over to the next sheet, you can see this exact same data, but now we've converted it back to actual so that it incorporates the actual revenue structures that existed. So it tends to be more jagged because we had increases and decreases in the sales tax rate, decrease in the income tax rate. So now the trend line is no longer smooth, but that's because the actual tax structure was changing. But the relationship between the total line and the trend line is still maintained. If you flip one more time into the third page, what you see here is we have, back to the preceding page. What you have here is in the dashed period, you have FY 2009 through 2016. The green line represents the trended values. The red line represents the actual that we think is going to come through the door. This is the period in which we dropped below the trend in 2009, 10, 11, 12, and even 13 before we returned to the trend. That is the effect of the economic correction that we're experiencing, of the bust side of the real estate boom when we see a collapse in, for example, sales tax-related activity connected with housing. So basically, what we have here is a portrayal of the relationship between trended general fund, the ongoing component, and the actual amount of revenue that we think is going to come through the door. On the next sheet, we have a blue line, and that is the committee median number, or numbers, that are inserted in order to show how those values fit into the framework of the forecast that we've produced and presented. If you turn the page again and go to what's labeled the cycle history and forecast for the total general fund, this puts the numbers in a somewhat different framework. Think of the zero line as being on trend. Think of the zero line as being on trend. Whenever the blue line in this case goes above the trend, we're getting extra revenue above what we would expect on an ongoing basis. And you can see in the 70s we were in that mode. That was a very strong period from an economic standpoint. We dipped below in the 80s. That was a period of weak economic performance for the state. And then you can see the boom that occurred in 2000-2001. This was associated with the investment bubble that occurred. We basically then saw the collapse in FY 2002. We went over $100 million below the trend line, and we stayed there for about 3 years before the real estate boom really kicked in 2004 and started injecting very strong revenue growth. And in 6, 7, and 8, we were above the trend line by a considerable margin. Now, our forecast basically says that we're going to realize actual revenues that are about $230 million below the trend line, and that we're going to see that, and that's the 9.5% decrease that we're forecasting in fiscal year 2009. Even though we've got a 1% forecasted growth rate in revenue in FY10, the trend line continues to grow, albeit at a fairly low rate because income growth is weak, but it's still positive. Our estimate is that in 11 we'll be $270 million below the trend line. And even though our actual revenue growth figure is 4.5% for fiscal year 2011, that still leaves us $211 million below the trend line. It takes two more years beyond that to get back to the trend line. There are lags in the revenue stream relative to what's happening in the economy. And as I indicated when I was here a week ago, the economic outlook that this is based on contemplates that the U.S. economy recovers in the second half of this year, the third quarter of 2009, with very modest but positive GDP, gross domestic product growth. But we don't anticipate that there will be employment growth either at the national level or in Idaho until the first quarter of 2010. So even though we see in our forecast positive employment growth out in the period first quarter of 2010, we don't recover to the trend line of revenue growth until fiscal year 2013. So there are some lags that are built into the process that are reflected in our actual revenue forecast. Now, again, just to provide you with some information, I've inserted into the chart the median committee estimates to show how they look in this context. And the committee numbers are about 18 million lower in FY 2009. I would say that that's pretty much spitting distance. I mean, that's not a huge difference given the kind of errors that occur in revenue forecasting. But the difference does become more significant in 2010 and 11. Your numbers that are shown here are down 101 million below the governor's forecast in 10 and 161 million in FY 11. And to put that in context with the trend that we've calculated, those are respectively 250 million this year, 372 million in 10, and 372 million in 11. So this committee median forecast assumes a much more significant drop below the trend line. Now, can I say that won't happen? Absolutely not. There's a tremendous amount of economic uncertainty in play today, and this is certainly possible. I would characterize this as a much more serious economic downturn than that which we're using in terms of our forecast. If you look at what, for example, Bob Maynard presented, I think it would be fair to say he was probably more optimistic than we were in our forecast. If you look at the university forecasts, they were clearly more optimistic. Their actual numbers were $130 million higher than us in 10 and $250 million higher in 11. That actually takes them back to the trend line, above the trend line in 2011. Could I say that can't happen? No. I mean, it's certainly possible, but I don't think it's terribly likely. Similar to the committee median, I think those represent more extreme possibilities in terms of what's likely to occur in the next several years. But again, there is just an enormous amount of uncertainty in the economy today that no one can say with any certainty what is really going to happen.
Mr. Ferguson, as long as we're on that chart, is there a reason why you didn't chart back this committee's forecast past 2008 or 9?
Mr. Chairman, all I was showing here is the forecast values for 9, 10, and 11. The 8 number and preceding numbers are actual history.
Yeah.
So this wasn't meant to look at past forecast performance. This is simply a representation of what the current numbers look like in relationship to this trend concept and how far below this trend concept we are. Now, I've got two additional charts that show, and these are done separately, that show the trend concept for both individual income tax and sales tax. This is the chart It shows the data for the individual income tax. And you can see that over the bulk of the 40-year period, individual income tax stayed reasonably close to the trend value, went up in the late 1970s, dipped below in the 1980s, particularly in the middle part when we had the high-tech induced downturn. But then it went pretty far above the trend line in the period running up to 2001. That's the boom that went bust that was related to the stock market, to capital gains. Clearly impacted the income tax. We saw the steep drop that occurred in 2002. Even though individual income tax growth resumed in 2003, we stayed below the trend line, and I would say significantly below the trend line, for a total of 4 years before we recovered. And then we saw during the real estate boom another period where income tax went into boom territory or positive cycle territory. What we're now expecting is that we're going to be below the trend for the next probably 4 years before we head back to the trend line. That's not surprising. We've understood that. We've recognized that what happened in 2002, capital gains, things that aren't included in personal income, and that it happened both in the investment boom and in the real estate boom. What's a little more surprising is the next chart. This is a sales tax, and this reflects the fact that during the build-up to the 2002 revenue crash that we experienced, sales tax wasn't acting abnormally. Sales tax was basically behaving in a way that we had perceived, which was relatively stable. In the last several years, sales tax has grown at a phenomenal rate, and we've seen, again, relative to the trend line, which is represented here by zero, very large positive numbers. Boom-related sales tax collections. That's why for the last couple of years we've been telling you that we're getting more actual revenue through the door than you can count on an ongoing basis, and you should be careful in terms of committing those to ongoing expenditures. We are now entering a period where we're seeing sales tax run below the trend line into a bust cycle. And it's our expectation that we'll be down for 3 years, and in the fourth year, come back pretty close to the trend line. That's out in FY 2012. But basically, this assumes that we're going to have 3 years where we're seeing underperformance in the sales tax.
Representative Roberts has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ferguson, on that trend line that's used, do you take into account the population growth, or is this just a reflection of gross receipts out the door? In other words, does your trend line, if we have more people move into the state, is it going to take that into account, or are we just saying that people were spending more money on the sales tax revenues, or is this a reflection of population growth?
Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman. Representative Roberts, the trend line reflects population, reflects income, it reflects the entire embodiment of the economy as expressed in total personal income. So personal income grows as population grows, it grows as the real economy grows, it grows as inflation occurs. So all those factors, and I think you may be referring to a presentation that was provided by the universities that broke out the component parts. These are all taken into consideration and embodied in total personal income. It can go up for a variety of reasons, and they're all rolled in. And it also, for the forecast period, the zero line out into the future, that represents the trend value projected ahead using our forecast of personal income growth. And if you go to our tables that I handed out to you, you can see that you could use either the normalized or the actual. Our estimate of personal income growth over the next three fiscal years, well, the remainder of this year, since we're halfway through 2009, 2.6 this year, 1.7 in 10, and 3.8 in 2011. So we're expecting very, very low rates of personal income growth, which are consistent with economic conditions. you could look at the prior years and you can see that in 2005, 6, and 7, personal income was growing at 8.8, 8.0, and 8.1%. We're incorporating the economic outlook in that number and then basing the revenue stream that would associate with that level of personal income in the trend value.
Representative Becky has a question, too.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mike, the thing I guess that gives me the most pause here is that we've been on that very last, that slide there, sales tax, is that if we've been looking back after all the actuals came, you know, after we had the actual data, was there any criteria that we could have looked at in 2005 that would have predicted, and is that what Greenspan called the irrational exuberance part right there? Was there anything that, if you know, in retrospect, as we look back, if we'd been watching that indicator, that would have told us this? And if so, what is that indicator telling us as this thing is dipping down? I mean, the fluctuation in sales tax, as you watch Idaho's data, this is unprecedented.
Oh.
And that, I guess, is what's giving me the most pause. And is there some indicator, had we been watching, that would have predicted that, I guess, is the first question. Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Benke. The irrational exuberance quote was from 96, and that was in reference to the stock market. And it was about 4 years premature relative to the crash in stock values in late 2000. The situation that developed in Idaho, and for that matter nationally, the housing boom really began in 97, but it got underway in earnest after the 2001 recession. In Idaho, if you look at the data carefully, I think it's fair to say that we didn't really see a housing boom catch hold here until 2004. 4, 5, and 6 were exceptional. We were seeing employment growth in Idaho driven by basically only one thing, construction and real estate-related activity. That was clearly a cause for concern. I had concerns that we would basically see a big correction that would have a larger economic impact, but what I didn't get was the degree to which the conditions that gave rise to the housing boom had put the entire economy at risk. And now we have the financial market meltdown, the credit crisis, the fact that we're even credibly talking about the possibility of a depression. I mean, that to me is absolutely mind-boggling, that the conditions would have gotten so out of line. It was apparent that things were unsustainable in real estate, but the magnitude of the problem, I don't think very many people really caught. Now, one thing I will say in relationship to where your question is headed, on the last page of this particular set of charts is our monthly revenue monitoring, and we have, you won't be able to read it on this chart, but the paper that you have in front of you shows the numbers through December. The first 5 months, July through November, are based on our August 2008 forecast. We produced a new forecast that was released by the governor on Monday. That's the $2,633.8. We're now monitoring on the basis of that forecast. And in the first month of this final 7 months of the fiscal year, we find that that month came in $10.5 million below the estimate. What we would expect to see based on the forecast is $2,633,000,000. Two things that came in low were the individual income tax of 11.6 and the sales tax at 5.7. Now, the individual income tax was dominated by filing collections. Until we see January, it's hard to draw any conclusions because that's end-of-year filing payments. even when we have that, it's not going to tell us a lot about what happens in April because it's not correlated very well. So I don't put a lot of faith in that. What is of concern is the sales tax number, down $5.7 million. In the first 6 months of the year, well, let me back up a minute. That shortfall of $5.7 million is associated with a year-over-year decline for the month of December of 13.9%. For the first 6 months, we're now seeing sales tax gross collections at a level 8.4% below the same six-month period a year earlier. In the period since FY1970, we have only had 2 years when sales tax collections have been below the prior year for the first 6 months. FY83 was down 0.3%, and FY87 was down 0.2%.
0.3.
Yes. Now, our forecast for this year is -6.4% for the full year. This is a little bit worse than that. But what I would observe is that December reflects November activity. When we get January, I expect that to be very dismal. Because what we know for certain is that the holiday season was dismal in terms of retail sales. We just got the national retail numbers for December, and they were down 9.8% on a year-over-year basis. So I expect that we're going to get another month of really disappointing sales tax data. The key, though, I think, is what happens in the following month. The collections in February, which reflect January, which we won't see until early in March, near the end of the legislative session, hopefully. The reason I think that that's important is because the December and January numbers are the holiday selling season. And I think that given the degree to which people have pulled back, there's much greater potential for a sharp decline. There's a lot of seasonality there that people can back off from. So I think that we'll see a stabilization out beyond the period of the holiday selling season. I'm not ready to say that our 6.5% decline for the full fiscal year, which is outside of anything in modern, almost the last 40 years, is rendered obsolete by our current experience. But these are clearly distressing numbers.
Representative Becky. Mr. Chairman, thank you. So, Mike, for those last two paragraphs that you just stated, are those embodied or incorporated in the governor's forecast? Mr. Ferguson. In other words, you like an I number better than yours now.
How's that for putting words in your mouth?
Mr. Chairman, no. The way we do the predicted amounts for the particular months is we look at a long-term historical collection pattern. And I would say that what we experienced with December receipts and are likely to experience with January receipts is way out of line with normal historical collection patterns. We haven't tried to adjust for what was clearly going into it, a very dismal holiday season. So that is being realized. The real question is are we seeing a continued deterioration that will bring subsequent months down to an even greater extent than just the holiday season? And while I can't rule that out, I think it's growing increasingly unlikely. I mean, we're going to hit a bottom at some point, and these numbers for tax receipts are out of line with what's happened so far, at least in terms of the broader economic performance. And I think it's going to take a couple of more months before we are in a position to declare whether this forecast, the executive forecast, is in fact obsolete.
Representative Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Ferguson, If on the new projection for the revenue forecast for 2009 is now at the 2.6 billion number, and we're 10.5 million upside down from that now, according to some, I'm using the $2.9 billion original appropriation for 2009. If the governor's held at bay at another additional 2%, that'd be approximately $58 million held in reserve within the department budgets. So if we've eaten away 10.5 of it now, we basically have $48 million left fenced out somewhere in the departments to get us through the next 6 months. Let me get clarification on that first, and then I'll have a follow-up question.
Ms. Ferguson.
Well, as you stated that, I think it's essentially correct, but what I would note is that the situation can change over coming months. It could get worse, it could get better. And a large part of that 10.5 million negative number at the bottom is due to the individual income tax. And we simply have no way of knowing what April is going to bring. We don't do estimated payments. We basically will get the entire 2008 tax year rolled into, for purposes of business and investment income, rolled into the payment in April. So there is an enormous amount of uncertainty as to what will happen in those subsequent months. It's very dangerous, let's say, to extrapolate any individual month's performance into the remainder of the year. Now,
Representative Roberts, Mr. Chairman, a follow-up then for this committee then, is, and the purpose of this committee is to make a recommendation to the Joint Finance Committee and to leadership about what the remainder of the 2009 budget should look like, and also make projections for 2010. But as we move through, and if we're halfway through the year, and the departments have extended half of their budgets, if we have to grab an additional 1%, that's effectively 2% because the year is half over. And every month we wait, and if the January numbers may be dismal, as you mentioned, it gets more and more difficult to balance the 2009 budget by the end of June this year. And I'm just very cautious about where we're headed, and if the 2% holding at bay is enough based on what you've recommended.
Mr. Ferguson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Roberts, this is a little over my pay grade. I don't deal with the expenditure reductions associated with holdbacks, but it's my understanding that that 2% that's being held in reserve is there until the end of the fiscal year. Now, I'm not entirely clear on the mechanisms and how that works, but it's my understanding that the instruction was that this could worsen and that there may be more needed. How that works in terms of as the year winds down, I'm not certain. Probably Wayne Hammond would be the person to talk to on exactly how that plays out as the year draws to a close.
Further questions? Hearing none, thank you, Mr. Ferguson. Mr. Houston. So while Ray's getting set, I see a couple of members of the Education Committee that has a meeting that starts at 3 o'clock, and I'm not going to be able to attend on time, so I would appreciate you holding down the fort. Yes, Houston.
Members of the committee, you should have a handout. It says Economic Outlook of Evidence Assessment Committee Fiscal Years 2009 and 2010. This is a draft. It looks exactly like last year's, updated for the new numbers of this committee. The first paragraph says, we have completed making our overall assessment of Governor Otter's general fund revenue projections for the fiscal years ended June 30th, 2009, 2010, and this year, for the first time for 3 years, for 2011. The committee reviewed and analyzed business tax and financial data, and then these are the projections. And for fiscal year 2009, the governor Otter's projection of $2,633.8 million, for the committee's median projections, and then the amount over or under. Those are repeated. The details are on the attachment 2. Might flip to that page. Attachment 2 has each of you, as you turned in your committee projections, as you turned in your individual projections for general fund for 09, 10, and 11. It's sorted. What I've done is I've sorted it by 2009 with your rank from most pessimistic to most optimistic. The most pessimistic participant for fiscal year 2009 was Senator Lefebvre, and the most optimistic was the Associated Taxpayers. Then for 2010, the most pessimistic again was Senator Lefebvre, and the most optimistic this time would be the universities. So that sort, that rank number there shows you the rank out of the 24 participants of how you fit in. 2011, the most pessimistic was Senator Geddes, and the most optimistic was the universities. The numbers you see there at the bottom, the range of participants for 2009 was $204.2 million between the lowest prognostication and the highest. 2010, the range rose to $462 million. 2011, $772 million range. And then the last column you see over there is the three-year estimate. That's taking the three numbers for each individual, adding those together, and then ranking those participant-wide. The numbers at the bottom, again, are the difference between the median, and the median of the committee median is just the 18 members of the committee. So there would be 9 members below that, 9 members above that amount, and then essentially because you have an even number of committee members, they'd be taking the 9th member and the 10th member and averaging their two forecasts. And then the difference between the median and the governor in the case of 2009 is $18.4 million, which is 0.7%, which is very close. The difference for the fiscal year 2010 is $101.4 million, which is 3.8%. And then for 2011, it rises to $161 million, or 5.8%. And with that, there's a graph on attachment 2. And then on the back is, you've seen this one before, this is in the packet. This is showing the how accurate or how close the different members have been in the past compared to what actual projections came in.
Thank you, Mr. Houston. Questions for the committee? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, what we would be looking for then would be you'll see a box on the front page that is missing, and that is, in our opinion, we'd like to fill that box in with this committee's recommendation.
Thank you, Mr. Houston. And just to start it off, committee, I think Representative Roberts had the right wording to start the recommendation that paragraph is that we should recommend the leadership and the chairs of the joint committee. Discussion. Senator.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I have a question regarding the motion here. I'm just asking if something like this is appropriate, okay? It seems to me that I could state that, in my opinion at least, the governor's projections are reasonable, which is what our mission is, determining if they're reasonable, but I would like to add something to the effect that, however, in the collective judgment of this committee, that the joint chairs and leadership should recognize that we feel like the projections may be overstated and that caution needs to be taken in the appropriations that are made.
Senator Hill, I think that would be reasonable language to consider in that paragraph. Certainly in past years where we've seen some volatility, we've recommended caution, and that would be in order this year as well. Representative Roberts.
Mr. Chairman, I do have a prepared motion that I would like to hand out.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator.
Just for the record, I've never in my life wanted to be so wrong, so...
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Shaler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's confessional time. I know that my number is 23 million high for 10 and 46 or so for 11 because of the critical error that I made, so I recognize my number is higher than I would have it be otherwise by those amounts. Thank you.
That's so noted.
Mr. Chairman, I think the committee's received the motion.
Representative Roberts.
If I might, I'll just go ahead and read it for the benefit of those that might be listening. We recommend to the Senate and House leadership and to the co-chairs of the Joint Finance Appropriation Committee the following. In our opinion, Governor Otter's general fund revenue projection of $2.6338 billion, is reasonable for the purposes of the legislature making general fund appropriations for fiscal year 2009. However, because of the committee's forecast for fiscal year 2010 and 2011 are significantly lower than the governor's projections, we recommend the legislature use the committee median of $2.557 billion for the purposes of making general fund appropriations for fiscal year 2010, if I might speak to the motion.
Representative Roberts, I think the committee's use site rules, so we'll need a second to the motion. I have a second. Representative Roberts.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I think over the past week or so, we've had a fair amount of information brought forth from many of the industries in the state of Idaho, from the Commerce Department, from the Labor Department, and from many industries in our state. I had the opportunity the morning of our first meeting to attend a forum in downtown Boise put on by Franklin Building Supply, the Contractors Economic Forum for 2009. And I was able to hear two other economists speak about the economy both in the Pacific Northwest, specifically Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Their optimism was not much better than what we've heard in our committees. In fact, one of the things that they mentioned was that it may be a little bit longer and maybe a little bit deeper. I just wanted to give some information that was portrayed at that committee meeting as well about the current supply of homes in Ada and Canyon County, both for resales and for new home sales. And as of January 5th, 2009, when you average the different levels of homes, the current month supply for Ada County for new homes was a 6.17 month supply of homes. And for Canyon County, it was 5.25 month supply. For resales, that for Ada County was an 8.7 month supply. And for Canyon County was an 11.97 month supply of homes on average. And I bring those numbers to the committee for a couple reasons. One is I think we've seen a lot of our economic growth in the last several years based around the building and the of homes and in that type of industry. And I think there are a couple individuals on this committee that have some expertise in that. And we've seen our revenue numbers in the state fairly closely linked to that. Not to draw this on much longer, but I think it's always easier for government to look to a number in their budgets that maybe hopefully is more likely than to be in a position where they have to back up and do the pullbacks. It's much easier to start at that position. And I agree with Senator LaFavor. I hope she is wrong. She may not be. With that, Mr. Chairman, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Roberts.
Further discussion? Further motions? Representative Link.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and of the points that Representative Roberts made, I think the most persuasive is the fact that it is easier to have the cuts made up front, be dealing with the lower budget, than try to fix it later. I mean, we're in that kind of a situation right now, trying to fix all 9 budgets, and we know how difficult it is for the agencies to do that. Whether we're right or wrong on the forecast, I think we flip the coin. If you look at my forecast, it tracked very close to the governor's, but nevertheless, I think on the side of caution, it would be wise to shoot for a lower target.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative LaFavor. Senator LaFavor, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I think it is good to be prepared for the worst. Not only in making cuts, but we may have to make revenue adjustments. Not something we want to do, but something we maybe need to start talking about. To get through this year, we may have to use more reserve funds than we might otherwise anticipate, and that leaves us less for the outgoing years if those are as bad. So those conversations about what we do with the grocery credit, things like that, I think are really important to have and to be ready for the worst case. And then maybe we suspend a few things and we're able to reinstitute them soon, but hopefully soon, but better prepared. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Further discussion? Hearing none, we have a motion before us. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. You wish to be recorded? The motion passes. Committee, I think we've done our work. Co-Chairman Baer and I will report to the Joint Finance Committee tomorrow morning and give them our recommendations. Thank you all for your good work and your devotion to this state. We're adjourned.